Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's hour three. We are live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, we're on Fox Sports Radio, 250 affiliates, iHeartRadio, FS1 right here. Joy Taylor is joining me. NBA draft last night. That's okay. Whatever. Joy loves the NBA draft. I'm an NFL draft guy. Love the NFL draft.
I love the NFL draft.
All night long. I can go. Last night, I got my iPad, whatevs, and I had NFL mock drafts, and then I had NBA draft, and I was as close to heaven as I can be. I love mock drafts. I like building stuff.
Yeah.
So I like looking at teams and think, okay, let's get a right tackle. Let's get a Sam linebacker. And I just think, I don't know why it is. I have a buddy years ago that lives in Los Angeles. He goes, when I first listened to you, he goes, I didn't know anybody that watched the NFL draft. And he said, I started listening to you about 10, 12 years ago. I'm like, God, this guy's obsessed. And he goes, I got to be honest with you. I gave it a look one weekend. I'm like, oh, I get it. I get what you're into with the draft. Like, you're just building your team, like your own fantasy football guy.
Well, also, like, yes, and the draft is hope, and it's, you know, it's all new, and you like the fit, and everyone loves their pick, and
right,
you don't know what they could develop into, and who's going to be their vet,
and it's fun, and sometimes there are surprises. So
yeah.
Years ago, Lavonte David played at Nebraska, and he didn't go in the first round; he went in the second round. Since he was drafted, he's the only player in the NFL that has over 20 sacks, over 1,000 tackles, and over 100 tackles for losses since entering the league in the last 8 years. So now he was a second-round pick. He wasn't a fourth-rounder or fifth-rounder. But Lavonte David, the Bucs' incredible linebacker, is now joining us live from Tampa, a place I used to be a sportscaster. We were just talking about the NBA draft last night. So you went to Nebraska. And
yep.
Do you remember draft day? Were you nervous? How'd it go for you and your family?
Yeah, I remember draft day. Draft day was a real, you know, one of those days where you'll obviously never forget. I mean, I was hearing a lot of buzz that I might go the first day, you know, first round. So I had a little hopes for myself going the first day. But for sure, I felt like I was going the second day, whether it's second round, third round. And then I just had a big family gathering. My family was over and was just waiting for my moment to get called, my name to get called, and ended up happening, man. I just remember I just ran over to my mom, and I hugged her. I gave her a big hug, and just a feeling that she would never forget.
Yeah, it changed your life, by the way. That's what's so great about the draft. You take young kids, you play high school football, and none of us have any money when we're 17, 18, 19, then suddenly you're a millionaire, and it's a pretty amazing thing. Now, Tampa's had talent, Lavonte. You guys have had talent for years. That's not the issue. It's been kind of getting the quarterback right, cutting down on the mistakes. Is this the most talented team you've ever been on in Tampa?
I would think so. I would think so. I'm trying to think. Like you said, we have a lot of talent that came through here. We just wasn't able to put it all together. But, you know, from this year, the main thing is just, like you said, just getting rid of those mistakes. Getting rid of those mistakes, whether it's penalties or, you know, just causing each other on the offensive side of the ball or defensive side of the ball. But now I feel like we were able to put that together because it's something that we really focus on. And as far as talent wise, man, I think we probably had the best talent from top down on each position. And it's really fun to be a part of. I mean, guys are really talented, and they also just know the game of football. So that's the main thing as well.
Well, so do you. You're a very instinctive player. So just think about this. So Tom Brady, how old are you today? Are you 30?
30. Yep.
Okay. So Brady is 43. So he was graduating high school, and you were just going into, what, kindergarten? How many years of high school are there? High school, junior high? Yeah, kindergarten, literally. So he was out of high school, and you were just going into school for the first time. So Brady's 43, you're 13 years younger. When he came into the locker room, did he have a presence? Was it different having a guy that could be a coach as your quarterback?
Yeah. Oh man, the presence was there when we talked on the phone. You know, I couldn't believe it. You know, I'm talking to Tom Brady right here. This is, you know, a legend. You know, this is a legend. He calling me, wanting to talk to me, and it was incredible. But the main thing was he just wanted to get across, just like, you know, he's fun. He's happy to come and join our locker room. He's happy to be a part of it. And said it's going to be a fun year. And it's just been awesome just watching him, the way he move around, the way he carry himself. A guy with that much, you know, caliber, that type of caliber guy, he just want to be treated like the guys. And that's exactly how we treat him. And, you know, he's very appreciative of it. But sometimes you kind of get you kind of lull away from that because you're like, yo, this is Tom Brady. You know, we got Tom Brady on our team. But, you know, at the same time, you know, he come here and trying to get the job done. At the same time that we know why he's here. He's here to help us win football games. And so far we've been doing that.
So when you bring Antonio Brown on, he's obviously wildly talented. So let's go back to Antonio Brown's first practice with the Buccaneers. Yep. I mean, we know Mike Evans. We know Chris Godwin. Yeah. We know Gronk. Yep. We know. But his first practice, was there a play or a moment initially where you're like, whoa, this guy can play?
Yeah. I mean, every time you talk about Antonio Brown, you always hear he's a hard worker. He's a guy who takes practice, you know, real serious. He's always full speed in practice. So I'm like, I've been hearing it a lot. So I really want to see it. And I can't wait till he get out on the field. So we down and walk through. And it's a walkthrough period, and he's running full speed. I'm like, oh, that's what you're going to get. That's the guy you're going to get.
Yeah.
Like, every time he catches the ball, he's running all the way to the end zone, and everything is, like, basically, like, game mode. You know, he's catching the ball on the sideline. He's doing his Tony toe tap thing. You know, he's celebrating. He's out there having fun. That is something you love to see because when you see it, after you hear about it and you actually see, like, man, you understand why he's one of the great receivers in this game.
So now I got to ask a question. So Joy just did a story where Bruce Arians said, I'm giving the guys some days off. My team is tired. And I said, tired? Yeah. You didn't even have a preseason. You're the deepest team in the league. So explain to me, Bruce Arians said, we're worn out. Is it because of all these primetime games?
I wouldn't say. I mean, you got some guys, you know, here and there that may need a little extra time or whatever to get their bodies back together. You got some guys to recover for some nicks and bruises in there. But, you know, Coach, he threw us a bone. You know, we got some veteran guys on the team who, you know, kind of, you know, he's look out for a little bit. So kind of threw us a bone. You know, he showed love. And me, you know, obviously being a football player, I'm going to take that.
Yeah.
You know, we all know it's a long season. And our bye week not coming up until week. I don't know when exactly, but a couple weeks from now. So it's cool to get a little couple days, you know, here and there. So he showed a little love.
Finally, Tom Brady may be great and everything, but about 3 weeks ago, he is just yelling and screaming and getting all worked up. And I thought, oh, brother, Tom Brady walking. You could get away with that in New England, but these guys don't know you. After he yelled at everybody, the following week, you guys came out and played really, really good football. So go back to the week of practice after Tom just got all worked up in Chicago. What were the next five practices like?
Yeah, that right there was the first time I saw it. And, you know, obviously me, first time seeing him, I'm shocked. You know, I'm shocked. I'm like, damn, yeah, you know, he's fiery. He's obviously pissed off. So all he did was when we was in the locker room, walking to the locker room after the game, said, we're going to be better. Get everybody a handshake. We're going to be better. And that following week was one of the best weeks of practice that we had. You know, obviously it was a plan against a great football team coming up, but just the attention to detail, the level of focus, the way guys was flying around, the level of everybody just focusing on honing in what they're supposed to do. Because, you know, obviously, and it showed that following week, you know, so we didn't have no penalties in that game.
That's
in that
right.
Game before, where he was obviously, you know, pissed off about, we had, I want to say 12 or 13. So that was obviously something we fixed throughout the week. And once you see when everybody's focused, everybody's locked in. And unfortunately, that's what it had to take for him to get fired up and yell at people to be able to do that. But, you know, so far, you know, we've been trying to stay on that same path.
Yeah, no, you're right. They didn't have penalties for next couple of weeks after that. Lavonte David, the pride of the Nebraska Cornhuskers, a great NFL player on his way to a remarkable career. And I appreciate you stopping by the show, bud.
Appreciate you guys for having me. Thank you, man.
Lavonte David, he is a rock star in Tampa on that defense. Todd Bowles, great defensive coordinator as well. Jonathan Vilma is going to stop by. If you've not heard, Klay Thompson torn Achilles. He'll be out again this year, which is really rough news for the Warriors, who had a, you know, it was about a 5-6 year run of being the best, most exhilarating team, and really a generationally unique team. They kind of changed basketball. They really did change basketball. So it kind of shifted from a mid-range game and a center game to a three-point shooting game. And they were at the forefront of it, but KD left. Steph is getting older. Draymond's out of his prime. Wiggins is a trade piece. Klay now for the second straight year is out for the year. So it's the dynasty part is absolutely over, because you no longer – you're not going to build it up quickly in the Western Conference through the draft. You can hope for free agency, but Giannis this morning, to me, you scratch off the Warriors. If I'm a Milwaukee Buck fan, I actually take a sigh of relief today, because I take the Warriors. Whew, okay, that's one team Giannis won't go to. To me, it feels like 75-80% Bucks today. Maybe the Heat. Pat Riley's the Nick Saban of NBA. He's a great recruiter. Miami has a shot. And I would look at Miami. But I Warriors are off the list to me as of this morning. Nobody's fault. It's just the way it happened. Jonathan Vilma around the corner.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Browns Eagles is featured in this week's free-to-play Super 6 contest, where players have won over $1 million so far this year. All you have to do is correctly predict the outcome of 6 NFL games, so get your picks in before kickoff Sunday for your chance to be a millionaire. And for top story scores and more, go to the Fox Sports app. Colin, give us your winner and final score for Browns Eagles.
I like Philadelphia in the upset. I'm going to take Philadelphia 24-20. It's Ohio, so weather may not be ideal. But I think anytime a team gets publicly criticized, like Philadelphia is, you know, we just had Lavonte David on, and he goes, the week after Tom Brady screamed at us, we had the best week of practice we've ever had. Philadelphia is just getting ripped on the radio. Do you remember that earlier this week, Doug Peterson is all ticked off on radio? I think Philadelphia, number one, has really buttoned things up this week. Secondly, is the Giants are better than everybody thinks. So when the Giants beat the Eagles, you think the Eagles are no good. And my takeaway is, no, the Giants are way better than people think. So that was losing to a really good football team right now. And that's my Blazing 5 tomorrow. Jonathan Vilma played in the NFL for a decade. He was a 3-time Pro Bowler, and we're lucky enough to have him at Fox Sports as an NFL analyst. And he is now joining us live. So, you know, this is interesting to me. So I looked at Jameis Winston video. Joy was doing a story, and I looked at the video. And I swear to God, he's lost 25 pounds. And that tells me, oh, Jameis is all in on this thing. He understands things didn't go well in Tampa. I get a second chance here. You're really connected to the Saints. You played there for years. What are you hearing? What is your gut feeling on what you'll see from Jameis Winston?
You'll see a much improved Jameis Winston from his Buccaneer days. And, you know, I go to the best teammate I ever had in Drew Brees. He was the best teammate in the way he prepared, the way he competed in practice, the way that he trusted the process. He always talked about the process, and he was like a robot day in and day out. So Jameis Winston goes from the Bucs, where he had no leadership, no guidance, no one to look up to by example and say, oh, this is how I'm supposed to practice. This is how I'm supposed to prepare. This is how I'm supposed to watch film. And this is how I'm supposed to enter and talk to my receivers, etc. He now goes over to the Saints, and he has not only a player, he has a head coach as well, that you look at both and say, oh, okay, I get it. This is how I'm supposed to do it. And it's showing up in the way he looks. He looks physically fit, physically ready to go, and it's going to show up in the way he plays.
Yeah, I mean, look at him right now, that video. He does not.
Looks great.
If somebody told you that wasn't Jameis Winston, you would not think that's Jameis Winston. He's always been a little pudding. He was always a little soft.
Not a little pudgy. That's all.
That's right.
You know, he had the baby fat still on.
That's right. So good for him. Now, there's a story out of Philadelphia that the practices have been terrible, and it's manifesting itself. The team plays bad on Sunday. And it's interesting because Charles Barkley was a legendarily bad practice player, but he was a great player. Clyde Drexler legendarily hated practice, but was a great player. I'm not sure if that works in the NFL. Do you have to be a great practice team or player to be a great team, Jonathan?
You have to practice great as a team to be a great team. You don't have to have everyone as a great practice player. I've been around players that were, we used to call them Wednesday All-Americans, Thursday All-Americans, practice squad All-Americans, because they were tremendous in practice. They go extra hard, rip the ball out, you know, give 110%. And then, you know, in the game, you're just like, what happened? Where'd you go? And I've had guys that they weren't necessarily bad practice players. And to be specific, they knew exactly what they wanted to work on in practice. And then that's what they worked on. Everything else, they're like, that's not what I need right now. What I need is to focus on X, Y, and Z. And particularly it used to be corners on the defensive side, where corners are like, I need to see the route. Show me the route and how this guy is going to run the route. I need to see that. Everything else I'm good with, you know, running to the ball and all that stuff. And I've had guys like that where you say, okay, leave him be. And he goes out and he performs well. The issue with Carson Wentz is that he's the quarterback. The quarterback is not afforded the luxury of being able to act like a cornerback, not able to act like a wide receiver. Quarterbacks, by nature, they have the ball all the time. They have, aside from the center, they have the ball the most. They have to have the best practice habits, and they have to set the tone, period. There's no way around it. So if he has practice habits that are similar to a position player, that's a problem. That's a big problem.
Yeah, that's great. Great perspective. Jonathan Vilma joining us. He will have Cowboys-Vikings. I'll get to that in a second. You had the Steelers against Joe Burrow and the Bengals. So first of all, give me your thoughts, and you can do both here in one question. Your thoughts on the Steelers defense and on rookie Joe Burrow. What did you see?
I'll go first with rookie Joe Burrow, who looked outstanding leading up to the game. Two most impressive things about Joe Burrow was his accuracy and his ability to extend the downs. At LSU, he wasn't getting hit a lot, so I didn't realize he was, you know, very able and very mobile. So when he would take a hit, he would bounce off it, extend it down, and you know, throw down the field. The accuracy has been very impressive, and it's very different than completion percentage, because I'm talking about leading a receiver and throwing a receiver open, not just, okay, I throw it to the flat route 10 times in a game, and yeah, those are easy completions, and it boosts my completion percentage. I'm talking about the tight windows that weren't necessarily there at LSU. Now they're here in the NFL, and he's still completing them at a high level. From the Steelers' defense, they had a very nice wake-up call and were very fortunate to get out of that Cowboys game, because the Cowboys ran all over them, frankly made them look like a JV team. And if it weren't for the turnovers in that Cowboys game, the Steelers lose. So they had a wake-up call, and like any really good team, they responded. They responded against who I just said is a very good quarterback. He doesn't play like a rookie in Joe Burrow. They made him look like a rookie. The defense was outstanding. The only issue with the Steelers right now is that they need to run the football.
Yeah.
They're not running the football well. And that's not going to travel when you start playing the better teams, Kansas City's of the world, Baltimore later on in the year. They have them twice. They're going to have to step up in the run game.
Yeah, that's actually a great point, is that I've been very much a doubter on the Steelers. I know they're good, but they're not running the football. And if you can't run the football, that means Patrick Mahomes gets two more possessions, and you're not beating Patrick Mahomes unless you're limited into 8 possessions, not 10. Jonathan Vilma is joining us. So you have this, you have the Vikings and the Cowboys, and I think the Vikings are now the most underrated team in the league. They remind me of the Raiders. Their quarterback's good, but doesn't take chances. They run the hell out of the football. They're not very good defensively. Maybe one good pass rusher and one good linebacker. But I think Minnesota's a real football team that just happened to lose 2 1-point games, so everybody buries them. You're looking at tape now on the Vikings. Do you see a team that could win a playoff game? What do you see from them? Because their record's not good.
They could definitely win a playoff game. And, you know, I look over at the NFC East and say, well, if the Vikings get a playoff spot, they're going to most likely face the winner in the NFC East. Excuse me if I said AFC. In the NFC East, they can definitely win that game. On film, what I see is a team that is a throwback team. This is the first offense I'm watching. And I told my producers, and I told Kenny Albert, Shannon Spake, my partners, so this is the first offense that I've seen this year that really wants to test your manhood. They are going to go. They have the fullback. They have the running back. They have the offensive line. They don't care if you have 8 guys in the box. They don't care if you blitz. They're going to test how tough you are. Not how fast, not how athletic. Can you run down my wide receivers? No. They want to see you in the box if you're going to tackle, and if you're going to tackle for 60 minutes. So I love any team that has that mentality, and frankly, the players that have bought into that mentality. It took a few games. You mentioned they lost by a point twice, but it took a few games for them to really say, okay, this is our identity. This is who we are. And you have that going in late into the season. They already beat the best team in the North in Green Bay after they lost to them in the season opener. So now you take that into the rest of the season. That really bodes well, and it's going to be a challenge for anybody that's going to face the Minnesota Vikings in that rushing attack.
By the way, you were a great linebacker. Multiple NFC Defensive Rookie of the Year.
No, Ray Lewis was a great linebacker. Well, I was pretty good.
Yeah, well, you're humble.
But Ray Lewis is a great linebacker.
So I'm sure there was a running back or two in your career that made you miss. But I watch Kyler Murray and I think, was there ever a quarterback that made you miss? Because Kyler Murray.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes I'm like, is he the best running back since Barry Sanders? I mean, what do you see when you see Kyler Murray?
I see a great problem that I don't have to deal with. That's what I see. I mean, he's just so slippery, and he reminds me of not really a running back. He reminds me of Kevin Falk from the New England Patriots.
Yeah.
When I had the unfortunate pleasure of having to play him twice a year in my Jets days, and it was the worst because you have to have this guy one-on-one, and it was similar to Kyler Murray where it was always in space. Kevin Falk on third down, he comes in, they throw him, you know, option route, or they're doing a screen, or they're doing something where when it's in space, it's almost impossible to tackle this guy. And so I'm watching Kyler Murray, and I'm saying it's frankly unfair to all the defenders because you always get him in space as opposed to, you know, running backs, you can kind of corral them and you can figure out everyone's fits and schemes. But, you know, going against Kyler Murray, God, I'm so glad I don't have to deal with that. Jeez. He's awesome. He's awesome.
He is. Cowboys, Vikings, Jonathan Vilma, Fox Sports. Good seeing you, bud. Thanks for coming on the show.
You too, Colin. Take care.
All right. Yeah, I mean, he, like Chris Spielman said, it's like, it looks like Barry, a lot of you guys are in your 20s, didn't see Barry Sanders play, and Barry was more slippery. Barry's probably the most elusive running back in league history. And there's been a lot of great running backs, but they're just not a lot of. Walter Payton and Barry Sanders are the two best running backs I've ever seen. And it was hard to. And what's amazing, they didn't have good offensive lines, and they were still great.
Running back it's such a unique position because every running back has such a special style.
Yes.
Like Le'Veon Bell looks so different than Walter Payton, looks so different than Barry Sanders, looks so different than Jerome Bettis.
Or Earl Campbell or
Derrick
Warner.
Henry. It's just such a unique position.
It is. Yeah. It's in Murray's dirt. You'll see tonight. Tonight's Thursday night football game is fantastic. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Speaking of King Henry, he had 31 carries in the Titans season opener, but he has not come close to that since. In the last four games, he's averaged only 19.5 carries for 89.5 yards.
That's right.
And the Titans have gone 1-3. But Ryan Tannehill says that reducing Henry's usage was intentional.
And he started off the season on a really high rate of carries per game, and something that's probably going to be unsustainable, you know, not only to get deep into this year or you know, into his career. You know, Derek's going to continue to be a huge part of our offense and the workhorse that he is. But, you know, it's been by design to keep his carries to a manageable level.
This is my issue with the Titans. I think they're a nice team, pretty well-rounded, well-coached.
Yeah.
Obviously, Ryan Tannehill has taken a step up. But for all that talk, which is all very nice, this team goes through Derrick Henry.
And when you reduce his carries and put more on Tannehill, there are limitations.
I mean, you lose. Like, it's quantifiable. The Titans went 5-0 at the start of the season with him averaging 24.6 carries per game, 117.6 yards per game, and he scored 6 touchdowns. How are they doing since then?
Well, great players erase problems. They have no pass rush. They're pretty sketchy on defense. So when he's running well, oh what? The defense isn't on the field as much.
And listen, 31 carries obviously is not sustainable, but 22 to 25... Can we do that?
This is when Tannehill signed that big contract, I was kind of like, whoa, because to me, Derrick Henry's not only their best player, but he kind of defines their culture. It's not a flashy It's a physical culture, and Henry kind of embodies what they really are.
They go as King Henry goes, which is why I was surprised that they gave.
Look how big his arms are. First. Look how big his arms are.
I mean, he's different than any, probably any running back or any football player I've ever seen. He's my favorite to watch play. He's just unbelievable. It's comical. Like how Kyler Murray is so hard to tackle. The only way to get him down is to push him outside. Like that's how you tackle him. Like you just get him out of bounds. Just get him off the field of play. Once he gets some steam going, it's a wrap for you. So the best thing that you can do is try and push him to the outside. But yeah, they're going to have to figure out a better balance with that because that's how their offense goes. So Kyler Murray had the opportunity to pick between the NFL and MLB after college. He chose football and is excelling in his second year in the league. But he admits he still misses baseball.
I miss baseball for sure. You know, just being in the box, being out there with the guys, competing. I know I'm where I'm supposed to be at. If I would have chose baseball, I think I would have been missing the hell out of football a lot more. But now for me, I wish I could do both. I definitely feel like I could. You know, I never say never, but as of right now, man, I'm having fun doing what I love.
Well, football's a way, first of all, football scholarships are a free ride for you and your family. Baseball's not. So economically, I've talked to a baseball assistant general manager in baseball that said this. He goes, we're losing all these baseball guys to football because football says, come to us, we'll give you 3-4 years of free college. Like baseball doesn't. And the second thing is, you play college football, you're the big man on campus because all these baseball guys are quarterbacks. And then you go and you're a big man on the NFL campus. It's like, oh, in baseball, you go to a minor league system. You disappear, and it's no fun. Like, football is stardom into...
Especially at the quarterback position now. You're going to start right away. The team is going to be yours immediately. You're not going to the minor leagues.
But let's be honest about most kids, and I'm one of these kids. Like, paying for college, if you could have told... How many people in America have college debt? Like,
it's a massive issue.
So it's like, the bottom line is football gives you a free ride. Baseball doesn't.
Yeah, well... The Oakland Athletics selected Kyler with a 9th pick in the 2018 MLB draft. So he was a big-time baseball player. I have a theory about baseball because it's such a romantic sport.
Yeah.
But people that play baseball really love baseball. Like anyone I know who ever played baseball, it's so impossible to get them away from the game, like even after they've retired.
Yeah.
Whereas football, like I know football guys are like, I have no interest in like coaching or being around football. Like I'm moving on to the next part of my life. Basketball too. I think it's because you start playing baseball at such a young age, like T-ball, that it's like ingrained in everything that you do. That if you play, like you literally could have played your entire life.
Well, and this is a great point by you, is that I read a story about this. So to play baseball, you have to go all in on baseball.
Yeah.
In football, you can play other sports.
Mm-hmm.
But in baseball, to be great, you have to be in travel baseball. What does it mean? From 12 years old, all you do is hang around with baseball players. You get a very insular life. Your whole life is baseball. Football guys, how many NFL guys play basketball? And by the way, you go to a college campus. You hang out with people. You have to go to college for like 4 years.
It's one game a week.
It's one, so you have a lot more time. Baseball guys are just all baseball. And so when they get out of baseball playing, that's what they know.
Yeah, it's a shock.
That's all they know. Like a lot of NFL guys, they get their degree and then go to the NFL because you're red shirt. You go to 4 years. A lot of these offensive linemen have been in college for 5 years.
it's a very different culture.
Yeah.
Finally, what do you know? Conor McGregor's retirement wasn't really real.
It was nonsense.
He's returning to the octagon. He's agreed to fight Dustin Poirier in the main event, UFC 257, on January 23rd.
I'll watch.
2021.
Yep.
Which should be a pretty big week for all of us. His last fight was January 18th of this year when he beat Cowboy Cerrone by TKO in 40 seconds.
Baloney on Cerrone.
Baloney on Cerrone. McGregor did beat Poirier at UFC 178 in 2014 in the first round TKO. And Poirier last fought in June. He beat Dan Hooker by unanimous decision. So this will be a very big fight. I'm looking forward to this.
McGregor will win. Yeah. I always take McGregor. Except when he faces the recently retired Russian star that just... Khabib. Yeah, he's the best fighter.
Khabib is the greatest. But I don't know. I'm gonna give this a couple months. I know that you know how McGregor is going to pop up a fight. So
McGregor puts himself out there. He's the Kardashian of the octagon. He doesn't care what you think. He can merchandise and market stuff. And I like watching Conor McGregor fight. I really do.
If nothing else, it's going to be a spectacle.
Where's the fight at?
I'm not sure, actually.
Where is
It might be in Dallas.
Why? Put it in Vegas. Put it in L.A.
I know he wanted to fight in Dallas. I don't know. Maybe someone can tell me.
Very exciting. He'll dust him. I'm a Conor McGregor guy. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
Except when he faced Mayweather.
I actually thought that that was a very entertaining fight. I wasn't sure what to expect from it, and everyone said it was going to be a sham, and it was actually a really entertaining fight.
It was I thought he lost, but I thought it was wildly entertaining. It was an event. It wasn't even a fight.
It could possibly be at Fight Island in Abu Dhabi.
I'm not into that. I can't get there. I can watch it and pay for it. I can't go to Abu Dhabi.
Are you going to be able to go to the Vegas fight?
Of course.
In January?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'll blow off work. No problem.
I mean, well, I'm sure it'll be on the weekend. You'll probably, but like, can you physically go?
Goulet what?
Coronavirus?
Yeah, it's a pandemic.
Yeah. What, nobody can go?
I don't, other than media, I don't think so.
Well, I am media.
Are you gonna wear like the thing?
Absolutely. I'll do whatever I have to do.
You go back to old school Colin, covering fights in Vegas.
I'll wear a media.
Well, I would say that you would go to a buffet afterwards, but those are definitely close.
You know, last time I went to a fight, Matt Damon sat right in front of me. And my wife was like, oh my God. No, I swear to God. I go with Ann. She goes, I sit down with her. She goes, oh my God, there's Matt Damon. And he goes, you know what she said? She goes, oh my God, there's Jason Bourne.
Oh, yeah.
And then he turns.
That's really a compliment, though.
And then he turns around and looks, and I literally went, I'm sorry. She doesn't know. He thought it was funny.
I mean, if I played Jason Bourne, I would be perfectly fine with everyone referring to me as Jason Bourne for the rest of my life.
Coming up next, the best soup I will rate by Bowls of Soup. The best games this week. I think it's the best NFL weekend starting tomorrow.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
RecTech, more than a gorilla lifestyle. RecTech with a Q.com, RECTEQ. Stainless steel build. Things last forever. Pellet stove. Fantastic. Week 11 NFL starts tonight. It's great. This is it. Three or four times a year, maybe twice, you get a great weekend of games. This is going to be a great week of NFL games. The best week so far in the season. And as you know, I coined this years ago, when a game is really great and you get into the late fall and the early winter, It's a soup game,
mm-hmm.
Soup and sweater game. So you put on the sweater. House was cold last night. Our house was cold. And you get a big bowl of soup. I had a big bowl of soup last night.
What kind of soup?
It was kind of a pasta soup. It was so good.
Nice. Minestrone, really good.
Oh, so good. And
pasta fagioli.
And so here we go. So I rate the games best on how many bowls of soup are they worth.
Okay. This is a big soup weekend. How many soups are you giving Cardinals Seahawks tonight?
This is a classic five bowls of soup. You cannot do better. This is five bowls of soup. First of all, I get the two most exciting quarterbacks arguably in the league. The number one scoring offense, Seattle. The number one total offense, Arizona. Murray has 29 offensive touchdowns, and Russell Wilson, 27, have accounted for the most offensive touchdowns by any players in the league tonight. And Seattle's defense is so poor that even if Seattle outplays Arizona, the Cardinals will keep it close because Seattle can't put anybody away.
How many soups are you giving Falcons at Titans?
I thought a lot about this. I wavered between 3 and 4, but I'm going to go 4. I think it's the most underrated soup game of the weekend.
Mm.
Jameis Winston, remember, this team, since Raheem Morris took over, is 3-1, and the Saints were on a 6-game winning streak. Now, last year, New Orleans won these games when Breeze got hurt. Jameis, remember, led the NFL in passing yards and interceptions last year. So he's wildly productive, can be mistake prone. But this is going to change, potentially, Tom Brady's playoff road, because if New Orleans does not win and beat Atlanta and the Bucs win on Monday night, Tommy's going to get a home playoff game potentially.
Sorry, it's Falcons Saints. Ron Burgundy. How many soups are you giving Patriots Texans?
Borderline one, I give it only 2 because Cam Newton makes it 2 bowls. And by the way, not full bowls. Half a bowl. Almost makes 1 bowl. The Texans are 2-0 against the Jaguars, 0-7 against everybody else. But the AFC East has gone from terrible to kind of interesting. This may be the last Patriots game of the year that is interesting, but coming off the Ravens win, If they win again, now you have, oh, wait, defense, Cam's working. Did they find their identity last weekend? So for one more weekend, a Patriots game is two bowls of soup.
How many soups, Eagles, Browns?
A strong three full bowls of soup. Okay, so when Baker Mayfield and Cleveland have to win big games, it can kind of be a clown show. And Wentz and Baker have accounted since the start of 2019 for 30 giveaways. Only Jameis Winston and Daniel Jones have more. You're going to get turnovers. You're going to get errant throws. You're going to get some attitude. But I also think you have two really potentially good defensive lines that can mess things up for the quarterback. I think you're going to have a lot of mistakes here, and I like Philadelphia to win.
How about Titans-Ravens? How many soups?
This is three boring bowls of soup. It'll be like just if you had broth. But it's worth, because the teams are good, it deserves three bowls of soup. There's no flavor to this soup. It is just, it is like the high school soup.
It's like pea soup.
Yeah, so it's a rematch of the playoffs last year. Number one scoring defense, Ravens. Number two rushing offense, Ravens. A lot of running the ball. Here's the thing. Please consume your soup quickly, because these teams run the ball and the game will be over in 2 hours and 12 minutes. So get to the soup early and finish it quickly.
How many soups for Steelers, Jags?
No soups.
No soup for you.
No. This is not worth soup. This is where you go out. You know what this is? During a Sunday, you go talk to your wife and you give her like 15 minutes and you pretend like you really care about what she's doing. But what you're saying is, this game stinks. It's not worth soup. You're like, honey, what are you doing right now? Oh, tell me about it. And then you go back to watching games.
Mike Tomlin would disagree. He thinks this is a very serious opponent. How many soups are you giving Packers Colts?
Went back and forth on this. Aaron Rodgers makes it four bowls of soup. So here's the thing, is that Aaron's a star, and I always watch Aaron games. They don't stop the run particularly well. And last week against the Titans, the Colts ran it well. Also, the Colts have some extra time to prepare. Well-coached teams usually are aided by extra time to prepare. This is also the way Minnesota is playing now. Green Bay needs to win this game because Minnesota is playing really good football. And Minnesota is going to crush the Cowboys this week, or at least beat them. So this is not a game you can take lightly. If Green Bay gets toppled here and Minnesota wins, the Packers and the Vikings have split games. So this is a way more important game for Green Bay than people think.
Chiefs, Raiders. How many soups?
On the surface, you'd be like, it's a two bowl of soup game. I'm going to give it four. Here's why. There's a revenge factor. Andy Reid and a bye factor. The Raiders keep winning these games. So what you have is the classic old-school Raiders pound the football, cocky, contrarian Raiders. And Andy Reid's like, we don't drive the bus around stadiums. That's not our style. So it's a little flair outside the normal game. Remember, Chiefs have won seven straight road games. So it's funny about the Chiefs. I've actually thought they've played a couple of games in the last couple of years really poorly at home. Whatever it is, it's a great sign for Mahomes. He's been a very good road quarterback. I like the Chiefs this weekend, and I'll say this. I've watched them play several times. Mahomes is always fun in these games. These games are always good.
Chiefs don't ride around stadiums. They ride to parades.
Boom!
How many soups are you giving Rams-Bucks?
If Goff plays well, I may be over-souping it here. I'm going to give it five bowls. I know, I may be over-souping it. I'm going to end up with, you know what I'm going to end up with? Too much soup and not enough bread. And that's the worst. Or you like, you have any bread left and you got bowls of soup. And it's like, it doesn't really work for me. No crackers left. I think it's more of a four because I have real concerns the Rams without left tackle Andrew Whitworth can move the ball. I have a feeling it could get ugly in this game. If the, remember now, here's what makes it interesting. First of all, there's a lot of stars. Aaron Donald's never sacked Tom Brady. I want to see that. The second thing is, McVay's never lost a game leading at halftime. And they're 5-0 this year, Rams leading at halftime. The Bucs are 4-0 when leading at halftime. So the game will be decided at half. And my feeling is, there's going to be a big play by the defense of the Buccaneers fairly early in this game. So I think the first half could be a 5-super. The second half could be a 2-super.
That's dramatic.
I know. Dramatic soup difference. The soup differential is significant in that one. So there you go. Very good weekend of games. The only five-star for sure, I mean, really, is tonight. And I'll say this. I'm not supposed to say this. Blazing five, it's not as good as last week. And I told you last week, I said it's the best numbers all week. And I was 4-1. In fact, I took the Vikings on Monday night and the Patriots on Sunday night. So I would have gone. Last week, I went 7-1 on my picks that I bet. Last week was a great week. The numbers this week were great Monday, but they've all been bet up. So the Tampa Ram number is still decent. It was great on Monday. And the Kansas City Raider number was great on Monday. Nah, it's okay. But I'll still show up. I'm going to show up for work. But it's just, I'll say this, just lower the amount you're betting.
Right.
It's not as strong as last week. And bettors got to have discipline. All right. One scoop every day. MDriveStart.com, nutritious shake every morning. Nutrients, digestive enzymes. MDriveStart.com. Check out the website.